Hello, and welcome to X-Men Unraveled, the podcast that covers the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. I'm your host, Noelle. Thank you for listening. Last episode, I covered a couple of miscellaneous adventures of the X-Men alongside the Fantastic Four. But I did need to make a correction. There was a typo in my notes that carried over into what I said. I covered Strange Tales number 120, not number 20. So just wanted to put that out there. Today, we're catching back up with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. The Brotherhood could really use a win at this point in time. They have been beaten by the X-Men more than once, just failed to recruit Namor, who ended up fighting against them with the X-Men. And the team itself is not very cohesive anyway. There's Mastermind always being a gross perv, Toad being a generally irritating presence, and Magneto's cruelty to literally everyone. Team morale is pretty much non-existent, with Wanda and Quicksilver already wanting to bail. So in today's issue, they decide to go after a new recruit to improve their prospects, the Blob. Last time we saw him, the X-Men tried to recruit him, but ended up just pissing him off and wiping his memory. Will the Brotherhood do any better? I think you know the answer we will be coming to. The second issue I want to cover today is another one-off, but this time with the X-Men working alongside Spider-Man. It's a fun short story, and we'll get to see our team of mutants not fighting another hero or group of heroes like last time. But since I've got both issues to cover, let's jump right in. Uncanny X-Men number 7 from September of 1964 touts the byline, "The Return of the Blob," with a cover of him fighting the X-Men while the Brotherhood all kind of watch with expressions of horror and disgust in the background. Technically, they're in the foreground, but you know what I mean. The issue opens with the X-Men posing for a photo with Professor Xavier, and they're all wearing graduation caps over their costumes. The teenagers have graduated as X-Men, which I guess means whatever Xavier decides it does. It's not like there's a formalized, accredited program for teenage mutant vigilantes. However, I couldn't help but wonder what the actual academic credit the team has managed to earn. I don't really see any evidence of Xavier teaching them anything aside from dodging traps in the danger room. Xavier does claim in the scene that they've completed normal prep school curriculum, but this is also the man who wiped their parents' memories to get them to the school in the first place. So do we believe him? I think you know what I think. I think the original five X-Men were duped by Xavier into not actually completing high school. Now, obviously, I don't know this for sure, but it makes Xavier look bad and kind of just fits in with the general way he's doing things at this point, so that's my thought. What is actually even funnier is that Xavier has them hold blank diplomas in their photo because they can't have paperwork saying that they graduated from a secret school training teenage mutants into vigilantes, which is fair, but also adds to the overall shadiness. After they take the photo, Bobby makes a great joke that they should send a copy of the group photo to Magneto with a note that says, "Always thinking of you." And if they didn't actually do that, they really missed an incredible opportunity. Remember way back when Magneto wrote his name in the sky in an early issue? I think he'd be so pissed to get the photo in the mail, but deep down, he would appreciate the audacity. Game recognizes game, you know? But Xavier makes everybody get serious and tells the X-Men that they are homo superior and have the ability to use their power for the good of humanity. As if he hasn't told them that like a million times at this point. But he says they must continue to keep their identities secret from humans. And he reminds them that Magneto is still out to get them, right before telling them farewell. The X-Men are a bit shocked, and Xavier just basically says he has things to do, so he's going to appoint one of them as leader in his place while he's gone. Happy graduation day. The therapy that these poor children all need. While the X-Men are dealing with that news, the scene changes to the base of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, where Mastermind is in the middle of harassing the Scarlet Witch. His brilliant plan to woo her this time is to call her an idiot, But then say that together with their powers combined, they could accomplish anything. Wanda, of course, shoots him down and also insults his powers, calling it nothing but illusions, which immediately makes me think of Job from Arrested Development. They're illusions, Michael. Sorry, I don't know why I can't stop with the Arrested Development references lately. Anyway, Wanda adds that she feels that her debt to Magneto is paid and she wants to be free. She wants out of the Brotherhood and the shit show that it is. But Mastermind is not listening and is also the king of not taking a hint or understanding the word no, so he creates an illusion of a palace to try and entice Wanda, to which she responds by saying that with him, a palace would seem like a hovel, not to mention that it's not even a real palace. Wanda asks Mastermind where Magneto is because that's who she's actually there to see, and Mastermind, the horrible, disgusting jackass, grabs her, saying that Magneto doesn't feel about Wanda the way he does. Which I would certainly hope not, even if they don't know he's supposed to be her father at this point. Or not, whatever, you know, it's complicated. As Mastermind is disgustingly holding on to Wanda and like pressing up against her, Wanda says that the sight of him is repugnant to her, and just then Magneto does show up, and he launches a pot across the room and says, "Mastermind, you dare." But Magneto, at this point, is fully in his villain era, so he's not worried about Wanda, or doesn't specifically berate Mastermind for attempting to sexually assault her. Instead, he launches into a diatribe about how powerful he is, and reminding Mastermind that he has sworn allegiance to him. Mastermind then starts confessing his loyalty to Magneto, who responds by saying that he only wants fear, because loyalty is for Homo sapiens. Pietro and Toad arrive into all this chaos, and Magneto announces that they have work to do. He has a new plan to destroy the X-Men. Back at the X-Mansion, Xavier is taking Scott Summers to a part of the school that's been locked and kept secret from the X-Men, and we are introduced to the machine called Cerebro. It's not a super sophisticated looking machine at this point, definitely not the fancy, like, building-sized sphere from the movies. It's a little robot-looking contraption with wires and attachments, like, spreading all around it. And Xavier explains to Scott that its purpose is to detect mutant brainwaves so that they can find more mutants. He says that he built it so his replacement as leader, who doesn't have telepathic powers, can continue to search for mutants. Xavier also kind of pats himself on the back and says he doesn't really need Cerebro because he can detect mutants with his powers alone. Okay, Xavier, we know you're a telepath. And of course, the one he has chosen as the new leader of the X-Men is Scott, and Xavier says that he possesses the rare quality of leadership. Scott is somehow shocked and starts listing off the qualities of the other X-Men, but Xavier's made up his mind already and wants Scott to lead in his place. The next morning, the other four X-Men are dressed for a day on the town. The boys are all in suits, and Jean is in a cute pink dress and hat combo. They go to Xavier's office and find only Scott there sitting at the desk instead. And they congratulate him on his new job as leader, and he admits that he didn't ask for the role and had actually been considering leaving the team. Which might have been better to keep to himself. It's not the most inspiring message to hear from your new supervisor. But Scott says that he still lives in fear of losing control of his powers, and he wanted to find a doctor to cure him. But ultimately, Xavier convinced him that he has a responsibility to use his powers against evil. And of course, you know what I have to wonder, whether or not there was some use of Xavier's powers to convince Scott of this. But that's my own mistrust of him speaking. There's no evidence for that on the page. Then again, there's no evidence against it, so I leave you to your own conclusions. Scott's teammates all express their support, especially Jean, who is so effusive that Angel starts wondering to himself how Scott doesn't see how much she cares about him. And then the four X-Men invite Scott to come out with them, but he says he needs to stay back and keep an eye on things. So he's left alone, listening for any alarm from Cerebro, now that Xavier has abandoned them. In the next scene, we're back with Magneto, who is not at his base. He is blending in while wearing his full costume at a carnival. Of course, Magneto is not there to have a good time. No carnival games or rides or prizes for him. He goes straight toward a performance ring where the Blob is demonstrating his powers. This time, he's showing off that an elephant can't pull him out of place, so he just stands still. And when a cannonball is shot directly at him, it just bounces off and falls to the ground without effect. Magneto loves it. He is now thrilled at the idea of getting the Blob to work for him, so he goes over to talk. And when the Blob sees him coming up, he greets the arrogant Magneto with, "What's up, Rube?" which is legitimately hilarious. And then we get a strange moment where Magneto is using telepathic powers to probe the Blob's brain. Don't ask me to explain why or how Magneto would be able to do this, because I have no idea. It's something that he's somehow able to do in these early issues with no explanation for how, and eventually gets dropped. The issue just describes Magneto as, quote, one of the most powerful mutant minds on the Earth. So I guess that's the justification. If you're powerful enough, telepathy just comes naturally. It's issue 7. Stan Lee and co. are still working out the details. Either way, he's not able to get any information, not because he isn't a telepath, but because he finds a mental block on the Blob's mind. Remember that Xavier had wiped the Blob's memory of the X-Men right after their last fight. But before Magneto can solve that little puzzle, some sort of carnival manager walks up and questions him and asks him why he's bothering one of the performers. Magneto, of course, starts into his usual spiel about how he's so great, and then he just drops a metal cage on the manager. This ends up setting off a whole riot with carnival workers rushing over to attack him. But the Toad and Mastermind have apparently been around. They show up and start taking on most of them. And Wanda helps as well, using her hex powers to knock things over. It's really funny and interesting to see in these early issues how weak Wanda's powers are compared to what we know she will later become. But right now, she's just a weak little 60s lady throwing around baby hexes. Once the fight is over, Magneto and the team address the Blob, and Magneto offers him the chance to join the Brotherhood and triumph over Homo sapiens. But the Blob is not impressed. He says he doesn't need them. Which I love about him. He just wants to keep living that carny life, but all these other fucking mutants won't leave him alone. Magneto doesn't take the rejection well and says that if he won't join them, then they will have to consider him an enemy. But the Blob is not there to take shit, and he grabs Magneto, telling him that no one scares him. Magneto is able to escape by launching the Blob away with his powers, sending him hurtling into a carnival wagon. And after hitting his head, the Blob gets his memory back. He says that now he remembers the X-Men are his enemies and were afraid that he would join Magneto. So he accepts the offer, essentially out of spite, which is another thing that I absolutely respect. Back at the X-Mansion, Scott's lonely vigil ends up paying off because Cerebro's alarm goes off once the Blob gets his memory back. As leader, he now has to get the team into action. Luckily, there's a little sign-out book that the X-Men have to use when they leave. So he checks that to see where the others have gone and goes to reach them through Angel's car radio. Life before cell phones. We find out on the next page that Warren, Beast, Bobby, and Jean have gone to a bohemian coffee shop in Greenwich Village. There's a jazz band on stage, one girl is dancing, there's poetry reading, and some candles for ambiance. Beast is at a table with Bobby and a blonde girl, and he starts complaining that his shoes are killing his feet. So Bobby says, just take them off because no one there is going to care. And he is right, nobody minds. But everyone around starts staring at the Beast's feet. The blonde girl who's sitting with them at the table makes a comment about how big they are. The joke makes itself. And another dude wants to sketch them. And then there's this other girl who says that he could lead a cult called Barefoot Beats. And Beast is then hoisted into the air by a crowd playing music and cheering about Beast and his giant feet. It is quite a scene. Back at the table, Bobby is talking to a girl named Zelda, but Angel interrupts and says that Scott wants to see them ASAP, so they all break up what they're doing and jump in the car back to the mansion. When they arrive, Scott tells them that the Blob has his memory back, so they all need to get in their costumes. We do get an entertaining scene where Angel and Iceman are struggling with their costume changes. Angel's wings are stuck in the straps that hold them in his regular suit, and Iceman freezes too fast and his clothes shatter. They then get a message from Magneto that he's going to put the whole city under his control and gives them an address to stop him. Sounds like a trap, but the X-Men go running. The Brotherhood, meanwhile, has made their way to a factory that Magneto owns to prepare to fight the X-Men. The Blob brags that he could take all the X-Men on his own, so he doesn't really need anybody else. And he's waiting outside when the X-Men arrive by helicopter. Magneto has ordered him to stay there as bait. While the X-Men hover to try and figure out where the rest of the Brotherhood is, Magneto shatters the helicopter to pieces, and Bobby, fortunately, is able to make an ice slide to get them all to the ground safely. Angel flies toward the Blob with a rotor from the helicopter, but Blob is just able to crush it. And it starts to look like the Blob was right in his assessment that he could beat the X-Men on his own. He takes out Angel, Beast, and Jean, who exhausts her powers trying to move him. But Magneto sees that the X-Men fell perfectly into his trap and launches several torpedoes through the air straight at them. Bobby is able to divert most of them, and the Beast gets a chance to throw dirt in the Blob's face to distract him and knock him off balance. Angel then goes after Magneto and the torpedoes, which are now circling around Magneto, but Quicksilver is there to stop Angel as well. Things start to take a turn because Jean captures Quicksilver with her telekinesis, which causes Wanda to jump in and try and save him. Magneto tries to stop her and calls her a little fool because he wants to keep the X-Men bunched in a group, but she does manage to free Quicksilver. Bobby captures the Blob in a brick of ice, and then Magneto launches the torpedoes. He doesn't manage to hit the X-Men. Instead, the Blob takes the full force of the hit, but he ends up largely unharmed. Magneto, who's just not able to admit that he messed up, blames the Blob for getting in the way, but he should have seen him standing there. He's not a small guy, so that's on Magneto. After his plan fails, Magneto has the Brotherhood, minus the Blob, load up in his Magna car and leave. He is happy to have realized that Professor X wasn't with the X-Men because he feels like he can plan better how to beat them next time without him around. The X-Men all gather around the Blob, and Iceman makes fun of him, calling him pudgy and saying that his new pals ditched him. Jean extends the offer again for him to join the X-Men, but he declines. He says that he has no pals, he's through with mutants, and he's not going to trust anyone ever again. Scott tries to talk to him about being a mutant and they have to use their powers for good, but Blob isn't having it. He says, "I've no hate left in me. I'm just wary. I'm going back to the only place where I belong, to the Carney. I've lived a sideshow freak and that's how I'll die." And he walks off alone. Beast makes the incredibly astute observation that he almost pities that tragic behemoth. Like, what other conclusion would there be but to feel bad for him, Beast? He got fucked over by the X-Men, fucked over by the Brotherhood, and now he just wants to be left alone, like let him live his life. He was perfectly happy, but these costumed mutants keep showing up just to torment him. Anyway, the X-Men have to figure out how to get home, so Angel flies off to get a taxi, and Scott tells him to bring back Fair because their leader is broke. Which, Angel's the one with money, so that seems reasonable to me. And so ends the X-Men's first adventure without Xavier. Honestly, it didn't go any worse than when he is around, and it's still pretty much a stalemate between them and the Brotherhood, and the Blob still hates everybody. The X-Men did have torpedoes launched at them, but really the only victim here is the Blob. And potentially Pietro. I have no doubt that if Wanda hadn't freed him, Magneto would have killed him along with the X-Men and called it collateral damage. Neither of these teams is really inspiring a lot of confidence at this point. I guess the best thing that you can say is they are keeping each other busy and avoiding causing destruction throughout the city. And Blob is taking his chance to go back to his life at the carnival, which he would have done anyway had the Brotherhood and X-Men just left him alone. I just can't get over how bad the Blob is treated in these early issues. The second issue today is Untold Tales of Spider-Man number 22 from 1997. This is a story written much later and added to their early timeline. This time, the team finds themselves fighting along with the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. The cover shows Spider-Man with the X-Men in their classic suits. I honestly really love it. And page one starts out with "Menace" in large, all caps, and an exclamation point. We see a man in a purple and red suit and mask with a huge collar, alongside of a couple identical characters who look like a mashup of Namor and Nightcrawler. Picture like blue skin with Namor ears and hair. And then they've also got white-collared red leotards with a giant M emblazoned on the front. Overall, costumes are very reminiscent of Magneto. The issue opens at the First Community Bank of Yonkers at 3:15 p.m., where our villain Menace is in the middle of a mutant supremacy speech that could have been pulled straight from Magneto. He says, "I am a mutant, homo superior, the next step in human evolution." And he goes on to say that he and his mutant men, the blue guys, are robbing the bank to fund their venture. And then we see three other quick scenes that all take place within 30 minutes, where Menace and his minions rob the Camelot Tower's penthouse ballroom, the Gideon Museum of the Arts, and a bank at Bodensteiner Avenue. That's all we get to find out before the scene breaks and we see Spider-Man, who's at home and really worried about his Aunt May, who's not doing well. She's just like in bed. And then he ends up leaving the house just to like get away and runs into a blonde woman named Liz Allen. And Peter and Liz end up going to the same coffee house that the X-Men went to last issue. And as they sit down at a table, wouldn't you know it, we see all five of the X-Men walk in as well. Of course, Peter doesn't know it's them. As the X-Men sit at their table, Hank notices a man reading a newspaper with the headline, "Menace Strikes, Mutant Robberies Increase in Frequency." And as the man is reading, he starts complaining to the other people at his table about mutants and how they're all around, waiting to strike, and then goes on to say that the government should round them up and do something about them. Back at Peter Parker's table, he and Liz overhear this man, and Liz says it makes her skin crawl to think mutants could be anywhere, even there, and they wouldn't know. But Peter Parker, resident good guy, speaks up and defends mutants. He says that they aren't monsters, they're just people, and they're as good or bad as people anywhere. Hank overhears Peter's remarks and shares with his friends the good news that there are people with sense in the world. However, there is still a villain nearby, and Menace makes another appearance, this time at the Van Lunt Trading Company, and we learn how he was able to commit so many robberies in so little time. He is telling his new batch of victims about his power of teleportation. Menace is gathering all the employees and demanding bearer bonds and negotiable securities, both of which I absolutely could explain in detail, I'm just choosing not to. However, one employee is able to escape and runs out of the building to call the police. By chance, he happens to run straight into the coffee shop where all of our heroes are hanging out. The man starts yelling about mutants taking over his company and killing employees, so the X-Men immediately bolt out, which is not conspicuous at all, and they go change into their costumes to take on the mutant villain. Hopefully, Angel had some cash on him to leave on the table to cover their tab. Peter Parker does the same, with at least the plausible explanation that he's got to go photograph the event as he ditches his date. The X-Men arrive at the Van Lunt Trading Company first and face off with a group of Menace's mutant men, but the employees that they're saving think that the X-Men are just another band of bad mutants. Spider-Man arrives and he sees the employees just running out of the building. But when he gets there, he's surprised to see the X-Men are the ones standing in the lobby. And it looks for a second like it's going to be a standoff, but Cyclops speaks to Spidey and says that they aren't the villains and offers for Spider-Man to join them. Spider-Man responds that he knows what it's like to get bad press and volunteers to help in the fight. They find Menace in another room using his powers to electrocute an employee to get the bonds and whatever those other things were. And then Menace sends more of his mutant men at the heroes, but Spider-Man's able to get by and go after Menace himself. He heads through the building's ventilation and finds Menace trying to crack a safe. Menace is also in the middle of radioing to someone, and he's telling them that there's a delay and to hold their positions. Spider-Man overhears and notices that Menace's voice has changed, but rather than investigate, Spider-Man charges in and takes Menace on. Menace uses his electrical powers just to kind of zap around the room and chase Spider-Man around, and eventually he does hit Spider-Man, who immediately is not worried necessarily about himself being hurt. He's feeling guilty that he might get himself killed while Aunt May is not doing well. But Menace gets a call on his radio, which distracts him, giving Spider-Man a chance to go on the attack, and the X-Men arrive in the room as well. The X-Men start discussing, like literally mid-fight, that something seems off about the mutant men. They seem like copies or clones, and they don't move or act like individuals. Spider-Man reveals to them that Menace isn't using mutant powers either. He's got some mechanical contraption underneath his suit that's emitting all the electric bolts he's using. So he and the Beast turn the equipment against the mutant men, short-circuiting them and revealing them all to be robots. So with the robot mutant men deactivated, Menace is apprehended, and Spider-Man tells the X-Men that he got suspicious because Menace was pushing the mutant thing so hard, and he never actually saw him teleport. That, combined with the radio conversations, gave away the game. And Spider-Man tells the X-Men that there must be 4 or 5 quote-unquote menaces running around town and timing their robberies to make it seem like it's just one mutant. Menace, we don't find out his real name, reveals his anti-mutant views by telling the X-Men that in court, he's gonna win because he's human and they're slimy muties. Cyclops tells him he's not worried because they're gonna track down his partners, which should be easy if they are as smart as this particular Menace. Cyclops asks Spider-Man if he wants to continue the fight, but Spider-Man ends up bailing with no explanation. And the X-Men are offended, thinking that Spidey just doesn't like mutants. Hank even starts saying that he wishes Spider-Man was more like the young man who defended mutants at the coffee shop. But the truth is, he has to get back to Aunt May and make sure he's okay, and also doesn't want to get himself killed while she's sick. So our last panel is Spider-Man feeling guilty about leaving the X-Men hanging, but his first priority is Aunt May. And that is the end of this adventure of the X-Men and Spider-Man. We don't get to see it, but I think we can assume that they were able to beat the rest of the Menaces and the Mutant Men. And like the Fantastic Four story, this one might not have been much in the way of like lasting impact, but the X-Men are starting to meet the other heroes of the world. And I was pretty sad that they ended up thinking Spider-Man didn't like them. Sometimes heroes' secret identities end up biting them in the ass. But at least as the readers, we know that Spidey doesn't have anything against the X-Men or mutants in general. And I am looking forward to our next Spidey X-Men crossover one of these days. That is all for today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow the Instagram at X-Men Unraveled. That's going to be the main online home of the pod until Threads fully replaces Twitter. And I will be back next time with more of the early 60s stories. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Until then, please just leave the blob alone.